So our first speaker is Marika Gruhl. Marika Gruhl is an art and architectural historian based in Winnipeg. I should note also that all three of our speakers are University of Winnipeg graduates. Marika holds an MA in Art History from Concordia University and a BA Honors from the University of Winnipeg. Marika is the Executive Director of the Winnipeg Architecture Foundation, and her book, Manitoba Women in Design, will be released in 2024. Today, she is going to speak to us about the oral history program at the Winnipeg Architecture Foundation. Marika.
Excellent. Thank you so much to the Oral History Center for inviting the Winnipeg Architecture Foundation to present on our oral history program today. The Oral History Center has been a significant resource for the foundation. Kim, Kent, and Brett, thank you for everything that you do, and congratulations on the 10th anniversary. My name is Marika Gruhl, and as Brett mentioned, I'm the newly appointed executive director at the Winnipeg Architecture Foundation. I've taken over from one of the foundation's co-founders and longtime volunteer executive director, Susan Algie. She is really the person responsible for embracing an oral history program at WAF and for keeping it going for so many years. There we go. Before I speak about the oral history program, I'll provide a quick introduction to the foundation and what we do. WAF is a nonprofit registered charity with the mission to advance the awareness and appreciation of Winnipeg's built environment through public education. While we are the Winnipeg Architecture Foundation, our scope expands much further than architecture and includes landscape architecture, interior design, product and furniture design, city planning, and much more. We're really interested in anything to do with the built environment. I've included an abbreviated version of our mandate on the slide here. WAF conducts research and disseminates these results through tours, exhibitions, publications, and more. We develop and provide educational programs. For example, we have children activity guides to seven neighborhoods in Winnipeg, and they've been translated into over 10 languages, including two indigenous languages. We aim to foster the development and exchange of ideas through these programs and community events. We have also developed an archive over the last decade with an aim to collect and preserve historical and contemporary records related to Manitoba's built environment. Our oral history program is a major component of our research program at the foundation. It started actually about 20 years ago with early interviewees including Etienne Gabory, Mel Michener, and Les Stetchison. Since then, we have conducted oral histories with dozens of individuals who have connections to architecture and its allied professions in Manitoba. It was not until we had access to the resources, though, offered by the center that the program really took shape and became formalized. So now we use proper consent and release agreements, which is very important, good equipment, and all of that. Almost every single person who works on our oral history program has trained at the Oral History Center. Our program is a little sporadic, mainly due to funding restrictions. When possible, we try to embrace any opportunity that arises to conduct an interview. And in other cases, we create a list of people that we'd like to interview and apply for specific project funding. We have also been fortunate to collaborate with two professional associations on oral history projects. WAF worked with the Manitoba Association of Landscape Architects on interviewing some of their key members over two phases between 2014 and 2017. And currently I'm working on an oral history project with Elizabeth Sellers, who's representing the Professional Interior Designers Institute of Manitoba. And we're doing interviews with significant members of their association. To date, there has been little documentation of early graduates from the Department of Interior Design at the U of M, and little acknowledgement of the significance of PIDM to the interior design profession here in Winnipeg, nationally and internationally. The Bachelor of Interior Design at the U of M was the first of its kind in Canada and was also recognized as one of the top programs in North America. The curriculum was super modern and closely allied to architecture. This was unique at the time as many schools were offering interior design through fine arts or home economic streams. The program's recognition as one of the best is evident in the faculty's involvement in the advancement of interior design education across North America. And so many of those who were involved in advancing interior design education were also involved with the PIDM. This project has been an absolute blast. I've learned about Manitoba Hydro from the interior designer who worked for them for 30 years. I've learned about the tensions between the Department of Interior Design and the Department of Architecture at the U of M It's always fun to get a little gossip. And I've learned about accessibility from a leader in functional design for products and buildings with respect to disabilities, aging, and universal design. I'd like to now talk about one of my major WAF initiatives and the role that oral history has played in the project. The Manitoba Women in Design Research Project aims to document women architects, landscape architects, planners, and interior designers who studied and or practiced in the province. Many of the women who helped shape Manitoba's built environment during the 20th century have been erased from architectural histories. This research project begins the process of addressing these exclusions. We've already launched the Manitoba Women in Design database, which is available on our website and profiles 50 women. And as Brett mentioned, a publication on the topic will be released in 2024. This project started over 6 years ago when I stumbled across photographs of Elizabeth Pilcher in a donation of records pertaining to the architectural firm Green Blankstein Russell, otherwise known as GBR. She was photographed multiple times with Cecil Blankstein, one of the firm's principals. This includes a photograph of her being greeted by Blankstein at the airport, which you can see on the screen. I couldn't help but ask, what made her so important that they documented her arrival in Winnipeg and that the firm's principal actually went to meet her on the tarmac? Thankfully, there was some information about her in the GBR records. So Pilcher, I learned, was from Australia, and she studied architecture at the University of Sydney. She also had a graduate diplomas in architecture and planning from the University of Edinburgh and Harvard. At Harvard, she studied under Walter Gropius, the founder of the Bauhaus School. And so I asked, if no one knew who Elizabeth Pilcher was, an architect and planner who studied and worked around the world, including with Walter Gropius, and she ended up working here in Winnipeg, how many more women did we not know about? And so I decided to find out. Pilcher only worked for Winnipeg for a few years in the early 1960s before leaving for a job in Chicago and then settling in Jamaica to work as a planner for the government. I sadly never got to interview Pilcher, but in many ways it is thanks to her that I started this work and began conducting oral histories with several other women whose contributions to Manitoba's built environment have been overlooked. These oral histories have been critical in addressing some of the major challenges I have faced in the project, which include a lack of archival sources, issues regarding attribution, aka who gets the design credit, and documenting contributions that were made outside the boundaries of professionalism. Pictured on the slide here is Patricia Kettner at the construction site of the home she designed for her family in Winnipeg's Garden City. I had the privilege of interviewing Kettner before she passed away in 2020. And without that interview, we wouldn't really know much about her. We wouldn't know the fun details like she visited Clement Greenberg's apartment in New York, and we wouldn't have access to these pictures either. These are many of the women we have conducted interviews with. They include architects, landscape architects, and interior designers. We'd like to expand this in the future and are hoping to conduct interviews with engineers and city planners as well. I'd like to introduce you to a few of these women and highlight some of the findings from their oral histories. I also want to acknowledge how thankful and appreciative I am that these women trusted me with their stories and agreed to participate. Some interviewees were very nervous and hesitant about participating, but I think I'm speaking to a room of people who know just how significant it is that we have these records. Margaret Stinson was born in 1939 in Carmen, Manitoba. She grew up on a farm and attended a one-room country school. During high school, a teacher recommended that she study interior design at the U of M, and she followed this recommendation and graduated with a Bachelor of Interior Design in 1960. One of her earlier jobs in the field was with Green Blankstein Russell. She said, quote, "I did a cold call on GBR and they hired me. Nothing was ever easier. We didn't talk about what I'd done at all. We just had a chat, nice little chat, and she said, he said, okay, when can you start?" They threw her into one of their biggest projects of the time, which was designing Winnipeg's new city hall. She conducted all the space planning, furniture, specifications, and so on. During her 5 years at GBR, she also worked on projects like the Centennial Concert Hall and the Manitoba Museum. After taking time off to have children, she did contract work for many of Winnipeg's prominent architecture and design firms. She also was heavily involved with PINEM and played a big role in the association receiving professional designation. Something I especially love about conducting oral histories is that you never know what you're going to find out. So in the interview with Stinson, she actually provided the answer to a question that those of us at WAF had been asking for a very long time. and that was who is responsible for the interior design of the now demolished Winnipeg International Air Terminal, which if you ask us, we all miss and love. This was such an important modernist building and the interior was absolutely fabulous. Simpson was telling me about when she started working at GBR and how exciting it was at the office because they were working on a huge project, which was the airport. And she told us that it was Marjorie Pritchard, who was the interior designer working on it. This was really exciting for me because I could then trace four women who worked on this significant project. Marjorie Pritchard, of course, as well as Elizabeth Pilcher, Eleanor Brown, and Diana Chan. And none of these women, to my knowledge, had ever been acknowledged for their contributions. In 2020, Dr. Serena Khashoggi and I did a virtual oral history with Ursula Ferguson. And many of you might recognize the sketches on the screen. These were done by Ferguson, who was the interior designer responsible for the UOW Centennial Hall, including the iconic super graphics. The interview was conducted in part for my Women in Design project, but also because Dr. Khashoggi and myself, with James Ashby, are working on a book about Centennial Hall and megastructures. Because of this interview, we have a deeper understanding of how significant Ferguson's role was in this project. It also gave me the opportunity to talk to Ferguson about her other projects in Winnipeg. She had just graduated from the Interior Design Program at the Ontario College of Art and Design when she was hired by Moody Moore, now MMP, to work on the Centennial Hall project. She worked at the firm for about 6 years before she went back to Ontario. All we knew about Ferguson prior to that interview was her work on Centennial Hall in the 70s. Thankfully, she shared information about some of her other projects, and it was with this information that I was able to go to the MMP funds at the Provincial Archives to see what I could find. This collection is huge. It's stored off-site, and there's a conservation process every time you request drawings. And so you can imagine it would have taken me months, if not years, to actually go through all of it. And so there's just no way I could have done it. And not only that, but sometimes Ferguson never actually signed her drawings. She didn't sign them. So by knowing when she worked at the firm, the projects that she did, and her drawing style, I was actually able to go in and attribute several drawings in that collection to her. Then there's the issue of when no drawings exist at all. For a long time, architects and designers, or those who put ideas onto paper, have been credited as the makers of buildings. But we know that that is not true. There are so many more people involved in the process. And WAF's oral history with Joan Harland is a perfect example of this. Joan Harland graduated with a Bachelor of Architecture from the U of M in 1938. Shortly after graduating, she was hired by the university to teach what was then called interior decorating. Her impact at the school was tremendous. She established the Diploma in Interior Decorating, later a Bachelor of Interior Design, and both were the first of their kind in Canada. And she went on to be head of the Department of Interior Design for 23 years. Harland was a member of the congregation at St. George's Anglican Church. And when it was time for the church to erect a new building, Harland joined the committee that was in charge. In this role, she influenced the design, but you'll never see her name on any architectural drawings. She said, quote, although there had been a man who was the architect of the second church and thought he was going to be the architect for the third, he wanted to have a Gothic revival church. And I said, no, no, not in the early 50s. It has to be what we call modern. Not only did she have a role in choosing the architectural style of the building, she also influenced the layout. Quote, Mother and I had been down to Minneapolis and we'd seen a Saarinen church where the choir was at the back and the congregation flowed into the chancel, flowed into the area around the altar very beautifully. I said it worked nicely to put the choir at the back. And so they had a balcony over the main entrance and they put the choir up there. It wasn't me particularly, but I was influential in doing it. Harland's interview also offered a perspective into the obstacles women faced entering architecture and its allied professions. She explained that she only began her studies at the University of Manitoba after finding out that the architecture school at McGill did not admit women. She recalled getting the McGill course catalog in the mail and seeing the words "no women" in bold under architecture. Then, after obtaining an architecture degree at U of M, she had trouble finding a job in an architectural office. This is a quote from her oral history. Quote, a well-known Winnipeg firm, actually one of the partners, when I asked for an interview, he interviewed me, and he was quite interested in this woman who had an architecture degree. I showed him my thesis, and he said, well, there was really no opening in his firm for anyone, man or woman, but that he thought with my knowledge of architecture, if I took a secretarial course, I would make a wonderful secretary for some architectural office. I didn't really think that was quite right, but that was the way things were then. An interview that I conducted with a woman who was entering the profession a couple of decades after Harland also spoke to the gender discrimination in the field. This interviewee was in her third year at the U of M School of Architecture and was applying for design jobs at local firms. She was unable to secure a job as a designer like her fellow male students, despite having higher marks than all of them. Instead, she worked with draftsmen in the technical department. She later found out that she was being paid less than her male colleagues and approached the office manager, who denied the pay disparity. When the pay issue came up again, she was warned about getting a bad reputation. I should say, though, that some interviewees spoke very highly of their experiences in the design profession, and I think this is really important to highlight as well. You've heard me say the name Green Blankstein Russell a few times today, and they were very notable for how many women that they actually hired. WAF's oral history program contributes to so much that we do. We use them in research for publications, tours, and exhibits. We also use these interviews to write biographies for our website and to enhance our building posts and all of our other online content. One project that I'm really excited about is a project called Hidden Winnipeg. It's being funded by Digital Museums Canada and will result in a website that invites visitors to immerse themselves to uncover hidden histories that helped shape modern architecture in Winnipeg. The website will be available for anyone to access, but our target audience is grade 11 high school students, and the content is being designed to help them develop skills to support historical thinking, which is in line with the curriculum. We'll be incorporating clips of oral histories throughout the website. So, for example, if you were looking at the City Hall Building Gallery, you might be able to hear Margaret Stinson talk about her role in the project. Or if you look at the UW Centennial Hall Building Gallery, you can hear architect Lewis Morse or interior designer Ursula Ferguson talk about it, and so on. A goal of mine that I hope to achieve within the next year is to have the whole collection listed on the Manitoba Archival Information Network so that more people know that these resources exist. Once again, thank you so much to the Oral History Center for inviting us to speak, and also for all their support in making the Oral History Program what it is. The work you do is so important, and I really look forward to seeing what the center does over the next 10 years. If anyone is interested in learning more about the Winnipeg Architecture Foundation or has any questions about our collection or any related thing, please don't hesitate to reach out. Thank you so much.